Well, almost good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Data Board meeting for October 22nd. Bryn, would you recall the board members?
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett. Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Cruz.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Would you continue with staff and public, please?
Okay. As I point to you in this room, can you please identify yourself and your organization? We'll start here at the table.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Back there in the corner.
Gene Terrio, ADA.
Back row.
Mark Herd, New Residential Group.
Bob Jeffersen.
Alan Berry.
Back here in the corner.
Sunny Morrison, Appetite.
Dick Schwoniak, Ada.
Karsten Radvick, Ada.
Mark Davis, Ada.
Jim Pensath, Ada.
Back here in the corner.
Jay Peterson, Ada. Jennifer Lane, Ada.
John Gibson, Richard Johnson.
Jerry Huday, Arthur Long.
James Wilson, Matthew Burrow. Helen Brammer, Gerald Downers.
I call him Ada.
Tim Gallagher, H. Yard Engineer.
Matt Maris, Ada.
Matthew Wainwright.
Quinn Kempinen, Ada. Do we have any public on the phone?
Yes, Mayor Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks Nurse Harborough.
Any other public? Looks like that's all the public for.
Thank you, Quinn. Before us is the agenda for today. For a motion.
Second.
Any discussion or additions, deletions? Hearing none, will approve as presented. Next up is our public comment section, and we will start on the line on folks online. I believe Mayor Hopkins from Fairbanks will go directly to you, sir.
Thank you very much. This is Mayor Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks, North Star Borough. Got about a day or about another day and a half of work for normal Monday through Friday. But I want to say that with the Interior Energy Project, and the Ada Board knows quite well about it, our community now sits with 130 miles of pipe that is, for all intents and purposes, empty. That's good work by everybody. These are incredibly important steps that have been taken. We all know that we need the gas. We need it as soon as possible. There are many moving parts in the Interior Energy Project. I understand that we need the importance to continue to keep this on track. And when I say on track, that means that there's two steel rails going down through our community as decisions are made, actions taken, that we need to stay on that track. There are many sideboards, little stations that go along the way, but I think that the Ada Board understands very well that we don't want to apply rates. For example, we're now at the point of the proposed best and final offers and coming into our community for a town hall meeting that's scheduled on November 4th. And then, of course, in December, I certainly hope that the Ada Board makes that selection for the entity that will move forward. Know that our community needs to keep our wagons circled, but not aiming in at ourselves. I believe that there is still much that the community needs to stand up and say, this is exactly what we need, that the lowest cost energy, the same rhetoric, to as many of our residents as possible in the shortest amount of time. We certainly hear that we're getting focused more and more on actually seeing $15 per MMBTU. I know that, for example, there's a board that the Golden Valley Board needs the public to make sure that they hear, that the board hears from our community members on what's important. There's many players here. Everybody needs to be standing as much in the line as we can or step out of the line, because this is what's really going to turn this community around, and it's going to be an example that I think as we convert, as we get more pipe, as we get storage, which is the story that I am saying to people, storage needs to be rolled along next year. It's going to be another community process that Yes, there's pipes in the ground, but we need storage for when that gas comes the following year. These are discussions that I know I have with members of the community, and I just want to say to the extent that the ADA board has voice and the power to vote and take actions, that you certainly ensure that we stay on those two narrow rails and don't apply the brakes. I want to say, in general terms, I appreciate everything that's moved forward. I know that there's financial issues, there's issues of decisions as to the best way forward, but that's what ADA board is charged to do, and the community, I think, will stand behind you. I know that I'll still be here, even though, as I said earlier, I'll have a mister before my name, but that's okay. I want to say thanks. Thanks for putting pieces in place since I believe it was probably about a year ago. Maybe it's now 2 years, and I'm just old and forget the timeline. But we have a process that's sound. The legislature says go forward. Reports are being made, and I guess just in closing, thanks for keeping Fairbanks on the map.
Thank you, Mayor. Any comments? Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask that my comments at an earlier AEA meeting in regard to Mayor Hopkins be moved forward and placed in the ADA record for our meeting. And in short, they just express my appreciation as a Fairbanksan and as a member of the ADA board for the mayor's steady hand on the tiller with passion, yet information, and impetus to move us along. Much of this wouldn't have happened had he not participated with us and many of our elected leaders. So if I could ask that be part of the record, I would appreciate it. Once again, Mayor Hopkins, thanks for everything you've done. Look forward to working with you in the future.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Any further comments? Mayor Hopkins, thank you very much. We do appreciate your efforts on all fronts with the IEP, and we look forward to hearing from you many times in the future as we progress down the track.
And you will, sir. Thank you.
Anybody else online wish to testify? Comment? Anybody in the boardroom? Yes? Let me in. So please state your name, affiliation if you have one, and limit the public comments to 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. My name is Nancy Wainwright, and today I'm here on behalf of P.J. Simon, who is the first chief of the Allakaket Tribal Council. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here today. He's out of town, but he wanted me to bring to your attention some more issues about the Amber Road, as there have been recent developments in that realm. He first and foremost wanted me to express his concerns that the money being spent by ADA to benefit a Canadian mining company will not benefit his people or the people of the region. Instead, he urges that this money be spent investing in Alaskans on education, which is the best investment for our future, or water and sewer infrastructure for the villages, which lack these basic human necessities. Allakaket still has plenty of buckets. ADA is responsible to assist in infrastructure, and because there's no infrastructure in the villages for these basic necessities, going forward with the Ambler Road to benefit a foreign mining company is not in the best interest of Alaskans, especially when the mining around the world, miners are pulling up stakes because of the prices are so volatile. He also wanted me to highlight the fact that most of the villages in the region have passed resolutions against this road, and that I believe Mr. Gedeke, who spoke earlier, highlighted the various village resolutions. Second, I want to address the mysterious and changing costs for this project. And because I have limited time, I'm just going to go through the bullet points. In July 2013, the ADA asked for $8.5 million appropriation. In April 2014, Mr. Leonard, in the minutes of this board, said there is a budget and it includes forecast expenses through the EIS that he would provide to the board in the next meeting. He believes it is approximately $42 million. I've searched the minutes of this board, and I haven't found any budget figure of $42 million or any follow-up on budget provided. The next figure I could find was in the Administrative Order 271 response by ADA, which said that $26.5 million has been spent thus far by DOT and ADA, and identified $17 million in ADA's budget. They said they'd spent $7.8 million to date and encumbered $5.5 million, which, if I did the math right, is $13.3 million. So ADA should have $3.7 million left. But the text of the submittal says that ADA has $9.7 million left and needs $6.8 million to complete the permit process. All of these numbers are conflicting, and at a minimum, before the board authorizes any further process or progress on this project, we ask that that commitment in 2014 be honored and the figures be provided to the public. The other issue is Dow Engineering, who has been the recipient or will be the recipient of more than half the money that ADA has received. We highlighted the conflict of interest of Dow Engineering in the June 26, 2014 meeting, and I believe Mr. Wilkin asked that a formal response to that potential conflict of Dow Engineering be provided, and that has been provided thus far. I think I may be out of time, but I would be happy to take any questions and ask that the ADA follow up on its commitment to provide budgets and information about the potential conflict of interest.
Thank you, Nancy. Is there any more questions? I would ask John to revisit the budgets so that make sure the public and clear and understand.
That's certainly true.
And the issue of the conflict, I'd forgotten about that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else in the boardroom wishing to testify?
I spoke earlier, either you just move those comments forward or I
can't. Yeah, we moved them forward.
Okay.
And just for those that weren't here earlier, Mr. Gettige came down from Fairbanks and from Brooks Range to testify in regard to the Antler Road. And his comments will be rolled forward for this record. Appreciate him coming down for that. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no one else, I'm going to close the public comment period. Our next item is new business, Seward Marine, Industrial Marine Center update. John, I'll let you take it.
Item 6A, Project Development and Asset Management Division requested the opportunity to present a brief update of the Seward Marine Industrial Center study. This time I ask Jim Hemsath to present and Colin Edwards is needed.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Fine, Chair, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Jim Hemsath. I'm director for the Project Development and Asset Management Group. One of the opportunities that we have as a department is to also function in an advisory and capacity way, working with communities for future development. And we haven't had the chance. We've been working on this for not quite a year, 6 months to 8 months, on working with the community of Seward on development of a business plan with them for their Marine Industrial Center. And I wanted to take this brief opportunity to just give the board an update on that. John, can you forward or hand me the mouse if that happens? Assuming I can do this as well.
So
I'm good. I have a mouse. I'm happy with the mouse. So our we'd like to talk about this, give you a brief overview of the project, what the area that we studied, the status of the breakwater construction. We'll cover interviews we've had with potential users and where we stand both in development of recommendations and two other concepts that are going to that have arisen from this. The project itself was. Seward has been involved for a number of years in trying to develop a way forward in their Marine Industrial Center. A number of years ago, they were working with coastal villages and the possibility of relocating their fishing fleet from Seattle to Seward for overwintering there, and a number of studies have been done The key result of that study was the need for a bike wall, and funding from the state was provided that those funds for that brick wall, which is under construction. I'll talk about that in a second. We created a memorandum of understanding with Seward and Ada utilizing some of our G1118 funds, which were established to look at some of these plans and future projects in a cost-sharing mode, where Ada would spend $75,000 and Seward would contribute $150,000 to that process, which we have contracted Arcadis Engineering to develop the plan, to take care of the interviews, and create a business plan for us and for the community. I'd also like to note that this time the PDAM group is working on an outline of what an additional high-risk fund or study fund we could use. Hope to have an update that for the board in December, where that stands as an expansion of what G1118 was originally. The area that's being studied is off of the cruise ship terminal. It's past the prison and encompasses right now, among other things, the Seward Shipyard, which is now owned and operated by Vigor Alaska, who operates our Ketchikan shipyard for us. And this area was, the question here is, how do we maximize the revenues from this? What development could occur? What infrastructure is necessary to help that development occur? One of the things that was necessary for Seward, and they have state funding this, was the establishment of a breakwater. Never having witnessed it, there are oftentimes tales told of people surfing in the area when the weather and the winds are correct, is there's a very long reach approximately to Hawaii where the waves come in. It is unsuitable for really docking of much in that area when the wave action is done. So there's a sea wall, break wall, stone break wall being constructed. Now it's a $15 million contract with Hamilton Construction. They are mining the armor rock and expect to have that completed in 2 years, which will essentially close off and create a harbor area that can be utilized for other marine areas.
Jim, is that Hamilton Construction for Fairbanks?
I don't know. Mr. Moore, I can find out.
Thank you.
There's a couple, two or three different
Hamiltons. Yeah, they've worked in Skagway as well.
Maybe a different Hamilton.
I think it is a different Hamilton.
You'll see Hamilton and Fairbanks with Great Northwest on the University Bridge this summer coming up here, and that's there out of orbit.
This table is just simply a compilation of the variety of different companies and their business areas where interviews had taken place. So we had looked at, through Arcadis, both oil and gas as opportunities, oil and gas support services, marine shipping, maritime research, the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, specifically with the Skouliak being home ported into Seward, as well as fair weather science and AvTech. And we also talked to both Motive Power Marine and Vigor, who have marine repair and shipbuilding areas. Now, another closer view of the area indicates areas that are currently leased. I think in your slides it will be easier to see them on the board, which are in red, and the blue areas are future sources of revenue that could be developed if those leases remain as they are. And that's just trying to give you an idea of the area is about 50% encumbered with leases right now. There's about half the land acreage that's available for other development. So after the interviews, we just have some summary findings. I'm sorry.
Could we back up to slide 6 for a second? Could you just speak to this is a
page
highly
six.
Technical question. Can you speak to Dutch Shell and Edison Choice, the impact of, you've got them in that long-term interest, and I would think that that has diminished substantially in the last month.
Well, what this table represented is where we felt they would fall into the plan as we went into the interview. And I'll cover the interview results, but to cut to the chase is they didn't see any utility in Seward for their equipment. They thought that Seward was too small.
So that's
even prior to the current events.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So, not surprising, some of the findings, very strong support for any development for those people that are currently have leases there. They kind of like what they have, and they're happy with what they've got. Couple of updates is Crowley is, I think they've actually landed now, storing some tugs and barges at SMIC. They did an unusual, almost Egyptian-style landing with an inflatable tube where they rolled the barges up on shore. Spartan 51 is moored at SMIC. That actually was both the City of Seward and conversations that Ada had with Spartan as they were working with Fury up suggesting that the opportunity for sewage be looked at as a possible winter overing area. An inlet fish is now available in the North Dock for possible operations. Both the synchro lift, which is the large lift that works with Digger Alaska, and the travel lift, which is for the city yard, have hollow capacities that will provide competitive advantage for vessels of 50 foot or longer in terms of length and weight that can be utilized to work on off-season. Abtec has been a tremendous support to the development, actually, the SMIC. They were essential in the creation of the breakwall. With their simulator, they took ships in and out when they were looked at. You have this kind of configuration, what kind of vessels can be brought in. And the simulator that they have down there in Seward was a key component of that. And we had, further discussions. Can they be involved in maintenance repair operations? Of course, they have their schools there and what they're doing on facilities, and feel that there could be some opportunity for Aftec to move some of their work into some of their schooling into SMIC in the area with, say, Bigger Marine as well. Mr. Parody, as we talked before, oil and gas vessels equipment generally have been too large. What Shell was talking about, their ships, although the Noble Discovery was docked at Seward last year, they feel facilities at the time prior to the change in Shell's fortunes just didn't quite fit. And then the Coast Guard is considering and is looking at the facilities as possible home port for their new Sentinel class cutters in Alaska. And the one point I'd like to bring up here is that this also provides another leverage point because those vessels can be maintained both at Vigor and Seward, but in a larger dry dock and shop at Vigor, Alaska, and Ketchikan, and at the Ketchikan shipyard. There are conversations ongoing there about their new fast cutters in the Sentinel class that might be able to have repair work done at Ketchikan.
Brett? Just briefly, could you describe the Coast Guard Sentinel class? How many of them are there, and what are they? What's the plan?
What size are they?
Yeah.
I thought they were 70 foot, but I really don't have the specifications. I don't have that information. I'll be glad to get mail.
I'm just curious. It's an interesting potential development.
Right. I think it would be a great development between the two shipyards and being able to, technically, we could build in the catch can, but in that. But in that,
as soon as they finish the ferry.
Well, there's always room. If you go down an entirely side yard, I would very much, and we've got some calls to the Coast Guard to discuss possible maintenance operations when they're done. If there's a long enough contract, it may be a sufficient revenue that would support the creation of a new maintenance hall at the Ketchikan shipyard that would be anchored by that work. So kind of looking at those numbers as well. So those are, basically general findings from what the conversations we had. So the results of the study kind of came out in a couple of things, and this is where we started to have a little pause about what was going on. Basically, there wasn't, from the interviews, any strong, uniform, silver bullet plan that if you build all this, this new industry will show up and at SMEC and be able to create that. Right now, they're doing fine with what we're calling organic growth. People that need space are getting space. There's some discussion, and we're working on the next phase with Seward to find an appropriate lease rate for some of their properties. One of the discussions we went by is that the leases that are there and the length of those leases that they currently have land leased out for may be longer than necessary and less from a financial perspective in terms of what they're contributing to the community, and they may be underpriced and overtermed in terms of their leases. But we're looking at what Crowley and Spartan's doing. We're looking forward to feedback from Spartan. They're drilling a continuous in Cook Inlet with some of these offshore platforms. What would be necessary to make this a truly efficient place to winter over and do maintenance work on jacket rigs? We know that they fit, and we'll get some feedback from them. It's obviously a big benefit for them being on the road system, rail system, for lack of another term, as well as close to the Anchorage Airport in terms of moving material.
Jim, the other player down there for leasing uplands is railroad?
Yes, that's a completely different area than what this is.
But wouldn't that be the other competing interest for tenants?
It could be a competing interest for tenants. The railroad, in some of the discussions that were had, and they really chose not to be interviewed for this. But the bigger question is understanding what their role is, trying to get a handle what their long-term plan was, and where synergies might occur. I think they're looking primarily still at some of the cruise ships and cargo coming in, as opposed to maintenance, where this area is more set up for a maintenance type area versus loading and unloading. Midterm, there's still an opportunity. We're trying, as we complete the report, of managed growth, possibility of, we're suggesting to the city that they might want a third-party management that could also market the shipyard or the area to other people. They kind of do it on an ad hoc basis with the city manager and the assistant city manager and the port manager. Is that really an organized plan about marketing and how they might market their facilities to other users and what it's about? It's just sort of there. There are some modest improvements that can be made now at the dock, an extension of the East Dock, which is where the jack-up rig, Spartan 151, is now, and some public facilities that exist could make a modest investment, can make some growth occur that isn't right now. As we mentioned, oil and gas was looking at as a focus, but really for the interviews, there didn't seem to be a lot of interest, and the facilities didn't seem to be as large as was needed.
Jim, is each tenant responsible for their own security on the leasehold land?
Yes, they are. And then, is there an opportunity for long-term maintenance, repair, build-out? And Arcadis did develop for the city just sort of a, if everything was good and you were using your synchro lift at the maximum amount you could in terms of the equipment most efficient, this is how space would lay out. This is where space for maintenance repair facilities would be. And current leases are around $156,000. Arcadis estimates the potential for rent and build out of potential leases bringing in $415,000. And total revenue from a full M&R build out, $1.5 million. And I want to strongly caveat this slide is that this was simply looked at a revenue basis. There's been no cost estimates as to what the facilities would be in terms of building out the facility. But they're looking at, if those facilities existed, a million and a half total revenue, which is almost $1.4 million a year more revenue than is currently being obtained by the municipality.
So when I look at these pictures, obviously it's got some development, it's got roads. Is there utilities?
There are some utilities that are in there right now along the roads, and actually the roads that are there exist. These are existing roads.
So there's water, sewer.
There's water, sewer, and power. It may not reach every place in completely, but the core is there. And that's one of the advantages, let's say, for the Spartan 151 versus where it was in senior moment. Elsewhere last year was they had to run their own generators year-round for power, as well as the Endeavor, which was offshore, the same thing. Power, water, not to mention hotels in the city were available, so you didn't have to keep the rig live, actually hot, while you were working on it.
And you would never envision, like the Port of Anchorage, where you'd have to have security and limited access like they do in Anchorage, where you basically have to get sponsored or approved or background checked?
At this time, the study doesn't go into that kind of depth about security issues. None of the interviewees brought up security as an issue for them or their business. So I don't think it was an issue. There's prison across the road. There is some kind of security in the area. But it was that aspect in terms of the limited port for a homeland security type aspect was not seen to be an issue at this point, but was not specifically addressed.
Okay.
And then just to kind of close off the study where we wanted to finish up with the municipality, what sort of after we hit the interviews, people would say, no, I'm not interested, I don't have this, I'm only interested in that. But they were, the interviews were very singular in nature to that specific person. There wasn't a lot of discussion about what if someone else was in there that you could have some synergies with. So the final aspect of the study is we're going to be holding probably at this time now, early next year, workshop with all the various stakeholders that we've had interview, as well as some of the subject matter experts today. As a group, this is sort of an organic plan. This is what's there as a kind of a group action. If this was here, does that make a difference in how you might have answered one of your questions or you see other uses? So there were isolated conversations that occurred as opposed to a broader aspect. And we just want to be able to close the study off by with the goal of looking at additional alternative future SNCC opportunities that a collective, if you will, a collective brain would think of as those that each individual needs. And then at that point, we'll close off our work with the city and provide the business plan we've got today. And not a big thing. We don't have, at this point, any kind of investment or even potential investment, what it is. But this was an opportunity for Ada just to provide some business outlook and business planning for the city of Seward that they were looking for. And I just wanted to bring it to the board's attention, one of the other things that we do.
Board member questions? Gary?
So, Jim, a couple of years ago there was a flurry of discussion here that Seward would be developed into a home port for the fishing fleet that now resides in Newport, Bellingham, and comes back in the spring. And turns around and goes back with our money in the fall.
That's right.
That, what, where did that go? Is that still something that you think about? Or?
It is not. That was a study that, in fact, I was on an advisory group on that. That study, they did that with Coastal Villages, actually, was the tenant they were trying to bring. Did a fairly extensive study with RMS, created the breakwater plan, did complete layouts, potential uplands that may occur that might be necessary. But at the end of the day, the potential tenant said, we're only there so many weeks a year, and we don't want to pay any more than we're paying now in Ballard, actually, where they were docked in that particular case. The end result was, we're not interested, and they signed a new lease. If you'll recall the flurry that was going on, Senator Cantwell from Washington made a comment about Alaska trying to steal the fishing fleet. And there were some of those discussions. Only slightly cynical, the folks that were part of the study did achieve the objective that they wanted, which was a better rate for leasing their and dockage in Washington, based in part from the work here at Seward.
All right,
thank you.
And I think in general what that did was saying, well, maybe fishing fleet's not what's going to be here because of the very temporary nature of their docking. There's a lot of space there, and I think the city went away, how do we develop as an industrial area and repair and maintenance and maybe some other things. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Chair.
Just one note. The Division of Economic Development produced that maritime report in 2014 that has some data on fishing fleet replacement schedules and might be useful background information to this topic.
My recollection, Commissioner, is that there was part of it, and I know it's also part of ongoing work at Ketchikan Shipyard in terms of what's out there, too, in terms of that forecast.
Our next on our agenda is the Interior Energy Project update.
Item 6B, update of the Interior Energy Project, Alaska, Bob Kepchick, and Nick Simoniak to present, Paul and others as needed.
Good afternoon, Bob and Nick. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you. This is your monthly update on the Interior Energy Project. You have up on the screen and before you a subset of the quarterly report that went to the legislature. House Bill 105 required a quarterly report with specific content. It matches what I've been reporting to you on a monthly basis anyway, so it'll be very familiar in terms of theme and content. At the lower right-hand corner, interiorenergyproject.com, when you pull that page up, this is the first thing that you see, so that those of you who want to see the entire report, it is up there. Nick Simoniak and I really are going to walk through the report, give you the highlights, tell you things that have changed or advanced in the 3.5 weeks since this report was submitted, and really take questions. This is your opportunity to give us our, you know, quarterly oral exams, and as we go through this, you know, we will. We'll highlight the things we think are important. If there are things that you want to know about, this is your opportunity to ask. And this did go to the legislature. They're pretty busy right now, and so it generated almost no questioning. I thought about presenting to the Interior delegation, but with the stuff that's in their queue, I didn't figure I'd get their full attention, and so probably we'll wait till the end of the legislative session. The current legislative session, and I'll spend some time with the Interior delegation making sure they get a presentation similar to what you're getting today. This report has four required components: a description of the project progress on all components, an update on the local distribution, to date and anticipated conversions, and financial accounting. And that's written right into the law, and so that's how the report is structured. As each future report will be structured the same way, and so you'll get to see how things advance and change to provide backup on what work has happened and how the report entirety is about 80 pages. It contains attachments that outline the RFP documents, the RFI documents. Major pieces of effort or work that have gone out are included as attachments. We're not going to go through all of those today. So with that, I'll let Nick start on the very first part, the description of progress on the components, and he'll walk you through. And again, you know, if something piques your interest and we haven't covered it, go ahead and ask. And with that, Nick.
Thank you, Bob. So I was just going to scroll through, maybe Bob still can, but otherwise I will jump off into the description of the project progress and just kind of go headline by headline. You can follow along. So gas supply. We are still considering a North Slope or a Cook Inlet gas supply. The presumption still is that the existing gas supply agreement between BP and Golden Valley Electric for North Slope natural gas would still be offered to a potential project on the North Slope. And then for gas supply Cook Inlet, that would either be supplied through a bundled proposal. We potentially have a couple of those coming in where the project developer would provide the LNG plant and gas supply. In the event that they would only provide an LNG plant and some sort of tolling type arrangement and not the gas supply, we have issued an RFI for gas supply that would be an independent process. That RFI was issued under AO 272. It's being led by DCCED with assistance from DNR, DOR, and ADA. We received responses from that RFI, and we have now entered into direct discussions with those respondents to kickstart, or we were kind of in what I would characterize as kind of in the jump starting or the starting off of the commercial process with cooking producers. despite the fact that DCC is leading this effort, any gas supply agreement through this RFI would ultimately be between the interior utilities and the producer. The state of Alaska's role is simply to facilitate those discussions. Moving to liquefaction. The liquefaction right now is still being driven by the RFP process that we've briefed the board on before. As you recall, to the RFP, we received 13 responses. The RFP was open to not just LNG capacity, but also propane, small diameter pipeline, or imported LNG or imported propane. The five finalists we've selected are all generally proposing LNG solutions. So we've kind of switched our nomenclature from, you know, an RFP for liquefaction / alternatives, and now we're just using liquefaction. But those five finalists are Harvest Alaska, which is a subsidiary of Hillcorp, Phoenix Clean Fuels, Salix, Spectrum LNG, and Westpac Midstream. We have, in the last few weeks of selecting the finalists, engaged in three rounds of direct discussions with each of the five finalists. The first round was conducted all in sequence with each one of the finalists, essentially to review their proposal and ask specific questions, clarifying questions from what they initially proposed. The second round was to review their economic and financial models. And then the third round actually took place in Fairbanks, where we brought in each of the three interior utilities to meet with ADA and the five finalists to discuss the proposals. We have made the request for best and final offers. That went out on October 16th. They are due December or October 30th. We have asked each of the proposers, even though for some of them they submitted more than one alternative to the RFP, they will each submit one project proposal to the best and final offer. Each one is invited to a public forum in Fairbanks on November 4th to present to the public what was in their best and final offer. That will be open to the public. Each presenter or each panel, so I believe 20 minutes. It'll be kind of in a town hall, open house style. And then immediately after that, the evaluation team will be meeting the second week in November. This will give them approximately a week and a half, 2 weeks to review the best and final offers, meet, and select one finalist to move forward.
So Nick?
Yep.
Then you're right, the best and final are due by the end of this month.
Correct.
Then they all, and are those confidential?
Those will be confidential.
But then they go into a public arena?
Yeah, so the proposal itself will be confidential to the extent that they don't want to share it in the public forum. It would be akin to last time around when we did the first round through the RFP. They submitted their proposal. Confidential is not the right word. They will not be disclosed until we select the finalists. When we selected the five finalists, we kept the proposal confidential but asked them to put together a five-page public report. The forum in Fairbanks will be similar. It'll be like the five-page public report. What would you like to pull out of your proposal to make public?
And the best and final, which will be ultimately be reviewed and graded by an independent committee after the public.
Yeah, and the intent is to provide the public a opportunity to provide feedback, and that feedback will be considered by the evaluation committee in making their selection.
So the evaluation committee does not have a criteria in which to evaluate the proposal after the public?
No, we do, and when we issued the best and final offer, the criteria for selecting the finalists was included in there. And that's been made public. I don't have a copy with me now, but we can.
That's an interesting scenario from that aspect. But you've got the public interjecting before, you know, without a criteria.
No, there's a criteria set that was provided to the vendors.
No, I'm talking about the review committee.
The review committee got the same criteria as the vendors.
But Nick just said that based on public input, the review committee is going to take that into consideration, which could be a multitude of different things that affect an outcome, which is not in the criteria that you have developed right now.
It's highly unlikely that any comments would not be included in one of the five criteria, given the last one is ability to meet IEP goals.
Yes.
Okay. upon selection in mid-November, we will directly engage the finalists with the utilities, try to cover as many commercial and technical terms as we can for coming before the board December 3rd to present our finalists. From that point, we will go back with the utilities and the finalists, continue to work on those commercial terms, and take feedback from the ADA board from that December 3rd meeting, and then ultimately come to the ADA board on December 17th for approval of the finalists as well as the overall project plan as required by HB 105. One final note for liquefaction that's not included in here, but is this should be under this category, is with the close of the acquisition of Pentex as well as the Attorney General's decision on the pre-existing sale agreement between Pentex and Hillcorp for the Titan facility, ADA is now in possession, or now owns the Titan LNG facility in Port McKenzie, and we are in the process of evaluating all options to include that plant into the ultimate IEP project. Transportation. We are continuing to use trucking as the base case assumption for evaluating all project proposals. For the proposals, we have received a combination of trucking and rail. As you might have heard, the rail was approved, did receive FRA approval for transporting LNG. It is limited approval, limited volumes, limited term. The ADA IED project team does see this as very good news, though, and a step in the right direction for the IEP, despite the limited nature of the approval. And we are working with the railroad directly to determine the best path forward to either executing a pilot project under the existing terms or going back to the RFA and expanding the terms to allow for more volumes and a longer period of approval.
Mr. Chairman,
Right.
Could you speak in more depth about the limitations and their impact?
The limitations are they are only permitted to transport 8 ISO containers round trip, I believe it's 8, per week. That's approximately 80,000 gallons. For example, a 3 BCF LNG plant will produce 100,000 gallons per day. So the volumes that are able to be transported under the current approval are wouldn't come anywhere near meeting the output of a new LNG plant, and probably wouldn't meet, and wouldn't actually meet the output of the existing LNG plant as well. In addition, the approval is only for 2 years, starting at time of approval, which I believe was a week or two ago. So really, that approval would be expired in October 2017.
So what's the roadmap to open that up? I mean, obviously, we've succeeded, thanks to the railroad's efforts in beginning, but that's inadequate. So how are we going to jackhammer on that?
We are going to let the railroad jackhammer on that. We are going to provide them all the information and support as they request, but they are going to be the lead agency interfacing with the FRA. We have a call scheduled with the railroad tomorrow to help make sure that they have all the resources from us that they need, as well as offer to provide any kind of direct communication with the FRA.
What we have now is permission to try it out and prove it up to them that it will work. One couldn't make a series of investments and decisions based on that, but it allows you to concurrently pursue that path while you're advancing your project, with the possibility that it will provide a piece of the supply chain in the future.
Mr. Chairman?
Gary, go ahead.
Just follow up. But isn't that problematic in that you're going to end up with dual investment? You're going to have to pull the pin on a trucking decision, at which point the railroad option becomes moot.
To the extent that the project grows across time, you will have some trucking. Once you've invested in the trailers, you're going to use those to the period that you do. That doesn't mean you wouldn't end up leasing trucks, or not trucks, the trailers. Right now, FNG has a mix of owned and leased trailers, and you could let those go. But it does limit their ability to compete for the entirety of the transportation in the future, yes.
Gary? So the terms of this are problematic. The bigger issue is that we're still short $130 million and 30 miles of rail.
And so is the thought that if you could put this together, you would put the ISOs on a truck, take them to the railhead, and then move it on up as sort of a proof of concept? Is that?
That was one of the proposals. One of the proposals looked at a greenfield plant co-located with rail near it, and so it would depend on who your finalist was as to how that would actually work. If it was a site near the current FNG facility, you're 60 miles of rail short. But the logistics, absent being directly on a railhead, would match what you've described.
It's just, with all due respect to my railroad, this continues to be, to me, a distraction. We know what we want to do with trucks and trailers, and let's move ahead. And if 5 years from now, or 8 years from now, the railroad can put up a decent case for us to back away from that mode, then we obviously will do that. It saves the people money. But today we spend a lot of time and thought on this concept of railroad, and there's just great big problems that frankly distract us. So having said that, I appreciate all their effort, but I'm not sure what utility it has to for us, certainly in the short term. Thank you.
Does the railroad component, any portion of that affect the storage capacity in Fairbanks and the decision making on storage and where the storage is?
It could, yes. It could impact kind of the, it could provide some small level of storage there in ISO containers. They would not impact the larger storage build out expected for a seasonal swing as far as location. I believe the existing FNG site has rail access, though it's somewhat constrained. It's something we can work through. And then alternative sites in North Pole with rail access, I think, could also be considered. But that's an interesting point. It's something that, as we get into the next section, we're going to discuss a storage and distribution charrette that'll take place next week. And it would be worthwhile to maybe not necessarily design a system around rail access, but to keep in the back of your mind that whatever the design that turns in the endurance, understand the implications of the rail.
So my limited experience with rail is that they become efficient when you have lots of cars with the same thing on it, and they go into a common yard, and then the end user comes to that yard and grabs what they need. Now, if you bring the rail to the storage facility, and so you're going to have a locomotive there to move the cars up as they offload. And then they've got to be stored on a siding someplace. I'm not familiar with this. It's a one trip pony siding up there next to FNG or not right now. But which adds to the transportation point because there's a cost to that. So I'm not familiar. Can you actually bring rail cars in, park them, and offload them without a locomotive being there, moving them up to the offloading dock somehow? Or does the rail have to have a local, you know what I mean? Does it have to move?
The logistics, we've seen two or three different approaches from the different vendors. One would be a big siding with a big loop that you would have the cars co-located next to the big tank one at a time while they were being unloaded. They also have pickers because they're ISO tankers and they can pick them off of the flatbeds, move them there, load them, unload them, and there's cost to all of that. And originally the rail was only interested in talking about, well, we'll tell you what it costs to get it from point A to point B. Given the handling logistics, they're expanding their efforts with these vendors on different ways to do that. The different sites that are looked at for potential storage in Fairbanks right now all have rail access, but they tend to be limited in size, and so the ability to have a whole loop is pretty restrictive. And so you'd be looking more at picking and moving. But the first step is the one they got, which is there's no permission anywhere else in the country to do this, and now there is. And so that in and of itself has been a lift by the railroad, and to the extent that they're enthused and motivated, we won't distract ourselves from the goal, Senator Wilkin, but we're going to support them as they work their way on this.
Okay.
still in transportation?
Yes.
So could we talk about the 13,000 gallon trailer?
That's my next bullet. Yes. I'm on my cheat sheet.
Oh, sorry.
I was going right there.
It's on your little
cheat sheet. Okay. No.
You don't have your cheat sheet.
We are expecting that the 13,000 gallon trailer will arrive in Anchorage on, I believe, November 9th. We are working with the trailer manufacturer in Western Cascade on, as well as FNG, on how it'll ultimately be used, how it'll be tested. But those conversations are happening, and we are expecting that the trailer will be here next month.
Bob knows what I'm going to say, but and I say this in the context of conversions. I'd like to see, Mr. Chairman, a plan. We have in our two organizations at least three people that are responsible for our public outreach, and that trailer to me is an indication of progress. It's a real indication of the future of natural gas in interior Alaska. We need to use that trailer as a tool to see that this thing is real. You don't see pipe in the ground, but you do see that trailer. It's big, it's impressive, and it's something that people can touch. So they have to know that this is real. They have to know that something is happening in Fairbanks, and they have to start thinking about conversions, which are so important. So I would like to see, Mr. Chairman, a plan for how we are going to, and I'll just say it, sell the sizzle. And to me, that trailer represents his progress to this project. And I said to Bob, I said, let's park it at Walmart for 3 days. Let's park it over at Fred Meyer. Let's park it on a street corner, just like a campaign sign.
Park it on Badger Road.
Park it next to that family on Badger Road, if they're still there, because I am. But we ought to have a sign on the side of it that says, your future, something on there, that suddenly there's 50 or 60,000 people that now know that there's something happening. And you can't, from the picture I saw, you can't miss that trailer. And that, to me, represents the future. And if shame on us if we don't take that investment and not only test it, but sell it to the people. So
those conversations are happening. And I had one with a representative, or someone representing the trailer company. And they were actually a bit disappointed we didn't have a board meeting in November because they wanted to park it outside during our board meeting. So the not only is ADA, but also the trailer manufacturer is starting this conversation of how to get public interest in the trailer.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask that be put in writing and just an outline of how we're going to sell that trailer by the end of the year and the plans for it? Obviously, it's got to get on the road. We understand that.
So if it gets on the road and has a problem, take the signs off real quick.
there are some risks that Karsten has it, and he's taking notes while you speak. So we can provide that.
Yeah, sorry, I just think that's
a good, it's a great idea.
Provide it to December 14th.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
You know that trailer is going to be being used when it's darker more than light, and I think there are ways too that you could figure out a way to light up the side of that thing as it goes down the road.
The reflective
something.
Yep. That might be the funnest request from the chair we've gotten yet.
Yeah.
No, they have some nice reflective stuff that goes on the side.
We have a photographer ready when it comes in on the barge.
Well, you want to kind of see what it looks like. Big shots. I've had a few mishaps with freight companies, Gary. Oops.
Thank you.
The next section is...
I just want to have one more brief moment. I keep thinking of the mattress guy. I think Gary in the trailer.
I like that. That's a good one. This just has to do with that.
Gary Sadler, welcome.
Moving on to storage and regas, following the format or the content of the HB 105 report, two components of storage. There's the RCA required security supply. Right now, they require 5 days of security supply at the coldest period of the year. And then also, the other aspect of LNG storage is seasonal levelization, building enough storage to put the excess LNG production of the plant when it's not cold out into the storage tank and pull it out in the winter when it does get colder and demand goes up. That will allow for more efficient utilization of the plant and transportation. The exact amount or the optimal point is not quite worked out. That's part of the design charrette, as well as once we receive the proposals for the LNG, we'll understand better the trade-offs and costs between storage and LNG plant. The combining of the utilities in Fairbanks, the interior.
Yep. Nick, is there a plan, a 911 plan, we'll call it, for if there is a interruption of LNG, that what happens now that the Pentec purchase is complete, that we as a board can kind of see that if for some reason the LNG plant at Point McKenzie goes down, what the existing 911 plan is, and then what it would be developed under the new scenario with the additional liquefaction that will be required. And how that plays into your 5 days of storage, if that's really truly enough?
I can tell you right now that just from listening to F&G's presentations, that their current backup plan is a negotiated agreement with the ConocoPhillips plant. In the past, they've actually trucked gas all the way from BC as their backup supply chain. I'll get their current plan for you and get that, and then we'll let you know based on who the recommended provider is, because that would change North Slope or Cook Inlet on that plan.
But does that play into the decision-making process of the finalist, as far as what they're, you know, whatever they're offering, whatever facility they're offering, how they're doing it, how it plays into an emergency plan, as far as contingency for them?
Their reliability and the level to which their supply is firm or not firm will play in. Force majeure, there's no way to get the gas to you, is really on the utilities, not the person building the plant, but that plan will have to be in place regardless of who does it in. So the F&G one would be the original basis, but you'd expect to see what happens on day 6 or what happens on day 11. You need to know the answer to that before you get to day 4.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So with the So I mentioned earlier we were planning an October 28th design charrette. This is the focus on the integration of the two utilities for distribution build out as well as storage. Combining the two utilities together actually presents some opportunities to optimize the storage infrastructure that we're planning on building out. But we will start with investigating restarting FMG's currently shelved efforts to build a 5.25 million gallon LNG storage facility, as well as starting with the evaluation of building a series of bullet tanks in North Pole to supply the newly installed IGU pipeline system, as well as potentially Golden Valley. And that will transition directly into the next section, distribution. Again, the big items here are design charrette happening next week to design integrated system. The intent is whatever the ultimate commercial structure is, we want to have the most efficient physical build out.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I've never encountered the word charrette. What's a charrette?
Two different definitions. I think one is kind of what a bunch of engineers get together and design something. I think the other, more cynical one, is it's something that consultants came up with to make their meetings sound fancier. But
maybe charge for it.
Yeah.
Well, 18th century word from the Sorbonne.
Just in case you would need to know that.
There's a third definition.
For what?
For a gathering of engineers to plan a project.
So it's a French word.
I thought it was a relative of the speaker.
Continuing on.
that'll we have not quite figured out. We haven't determined the location yet. It'll be the three interior utilities we'll be working with.
It was planned in Fairbanks. We're also considering going and working with NSAR because they're the ones doing the hydraulic modeling that might serve better to have it be there. And so it'll either be in Fairbanks or it'll be in conjunction with NSAR staff down here. And we're working out where that will work best.
Fairbanks, let me know.
We will.
Curiosity, this kind of hit me. What company is going to be pulling this trailer?
That
I just out of curiosity, who's pulling it?
It's one of F&G's contractors, and I didn't ask. They have three right now. I did not ask which one.
So the trailer show is being worked out kind of in two different levels. One between the trailer company and F&G on the actual contractual arrangement for hauling it, filling it, moving it around, and then certainly between the trailer manufacturer and Karsten on how we're going to get people to look at it. So we're working through that, and it's not completely resolved.
Hopefully a later model, nicer looking tractor, pull the trailer.
That's noted.
We want it to be able to be hauled by all types, though.
No. Yeah.
So the three big issues of distribution, the design charrette, the other one is the acquisition of Pentex. Ada is now the owner of FNG. We've started the process of the transition, working with the FNG management team. That is going smoothly. And then the third item is the 2015 construction season, successful construction season for FNG and IGU. FNG installed almost 30 miles of pipeline in downtown Fairbanks, and IGU installed their full 73 miles of pipeline. So with that, I'll hand off to Bob for the next section of
the conversions. The conversion group is still meeting, and the activities that you see in the report match the focus that they have. The biggest change since the end of the month is there has been an effort of advertising the AHFC conversion program that it currently exists, where funding is available. Gene Terrio has taken the lead on that, working with the conversion group. And so there are some public announcements, there are some mail outs. Gene presented at the chamber with the effort to get residents to raise their hand, get their audits, and as they look to improve their homes, new furnaces are part of that. And if you get a new furnace in that's partially paid by a weatherization program, your conversion cost down the road decreased tremendously. And so that's ongoing this month in Fairbanks.
Mr. Chairman.
Fred.
Okay. Conversions, and I know this is true to the project team, but they remain a central concern in the overall viability of the project, particularly in this low energy price environment. And so I'm wondering, in paragraph 2, you say no conversions are currently underway prior to any increase in the gas supply until supplies increase through the IEP utilizing our tools. There's not sufficient gas in the areas. Is that true? Is there any way to push the envelope there and get some initial conversions as demonstration projects? Or could we get a pilot program going and get the first 10 houses or the first 50 houses? Or
The challenge is firm supply in the winter. Right now, FNG is maxed out in the number of firm customers they can commit to in the winter because of their 50,000 gallon per day supply.
Is that true? Did we own that now, right?
Yes.
So how hard can we push that?
We can push that by looking at investment in storage. Because as you add storage, you add the capacity to cycle and you increase your 5 days ability.
Where's the data for that? I mean, how long have we been sitting on that? How often during the last three winters have we been sitting on that 5-day threshold?
I don't know the answer to that.
So I just think that bears some scrutiny.
You bet. There are also, both IGU and FNG look to, is there a way to, once we know what the supply is, provide early gas in the interim while we have the plant being constructed.
both are hesitant to say, yes, I want to add firm customers on an alternative supply until I know what my landing pad is.
We've got, and I'm not sure of the linkage here, but we've got, what's the number, 100 miles of pipe in the ground?
130
miles of pipe in the ground. If we could carve out, I recognize it'd be small, but if we could carve out a pilot, I think that's just beats the damn trailer.
And even absent that 130 miles of pipe in the ground, there has been pipe in front of unserved customers on F&G's existing system for a period of time.
I'd like to get it into the pipe.
You bet. Okay.
Just an idea. I'd like to push.
And we will talk about more about conversions as I flip the page too. Because the next part is the update on the build out. I'm not going to give you because Nick just gave you, but the report asks for 2-date conversions, tells you the same thing, and then anticipated conversions. Those are the conversions off the Cardinal report. As I told you last month, we've gone back to Cardinal and asked them to do an analysis of their terminology's willingness to convert at lower oil prices and a smaller differential between gas and oil, and that work is complete. We use that work to develop the demand scenario for our best and final offers. And so in the next report, there will be a series of potential conversions based on oil price scenarios. The cliff notes is at current oil prices and expectation that would continue for a 4 to 5 year period, you would see about a 1/3 drop in your projected demand, and it would slow a little bit. And so that's the information we provided to the developers along with Golden Valley's approach to a summer plan, and we are making sure that the project we bring you will survive a low oil price scenario economically while we do this under a lower willingness to convert. And the demand schedules that you've seen for the best and finals reflect that conservative information from Cardinal, and that report will be final and out on the web at some point. The next page is the financial accounting that we provided to the legislature. You know, numbers are my friends, but Nick did the work, so I'll let him talk about his own work.
Okay, thank you. So HB 105 specifically asked for how much it has spent from the funds appropriated associated with the Interior Energy Project in SB 23. So out of the capital appropriation, so we kind of stepped through the three columns, the three funding sources, the capital appropriation, the IEP set, and the $150 million in bonding authority. And then as we kind of go down, we broke the IEP into two phases. Phase one is essentially everything up until the beginning of this year. And then now we have what we call phase two. At the beginning of the year, we made the internal decision to kind of draw a line and start a new kind of internal accounting. Part of that new internal accounting is we are breaking our spending down by not just liquefaction distribution, but by commodity, LNG plant, trucking, storage, distribution, project management. So you can see to date that we have, and this is current, I believe, as of September 17th, a little over $14 million in phase one. The bulk of that was to pursue the LNG plant on the North Slope as well as an LNG pad on the North Slope. And just over $115,000 in phase two out of the capital appropriations. As far as sets, the sets for under the IEP that we've extended so far have been entirely associated with the distribution loans to FNG and IGU, and we have not yet issued any of the bonds for the project.
So these are the tools, if you look at the bottom part, these are the tools we have remaining as we work with potential developers in what financing is necessary to put your plant together, and we work on the storage and distribution and parking portions with the utilities.
The North Slope pad, is there any revenue being generated off of that?
Not yet, no. There's been some interest, but no revenue yet. It's hard to sign up any long-term because we have at least one or two proposers that are considering putting a large LNG plant on there, so we can't let anyone on there for significant periods of time until that's settled.
So no short-term storage?
We have somebody on the pad right now, short-term storage management.
So where are those dollars going to? They're going back into the project to reduce the cap cost? Or
I'll have to get back to Chair Hannes. I don't remember that. I wish I had that question a month ago when I remember.
And clearly we didn't even know it was leased, so
I didn't know if you could close the deal.
You can answer that.
The short of it is that in the other piece of it is there are inflows from the storage Janus group put in place. There are also ongoing outflows from the ENR permitting and other costs. So our intent is to use as much of those inflows to pay those outflows. So
but it's going back towards the project that it's reducing.
In short, that would be yes.
Okay.
My apologies.
In the end, that's the result.
Yeah, that's it.
Apologies for not knowing off the top of my head. I knew Jim was in the conversations. I didn't know he actually got us some revenues.
Oh, the money man over here, don't.
So he's from the group that you know that makes money for us, right?
And just the gas supply is coming from the north. Is that pad marketable?
Yes. Yep. It's a good pad from all reports.
Thank you.
Good location. Any other question on the financing?
Good report, thank you.
Thank you.
So really, in sum, this is where we are. The things you're going to want to watch out for, the best and final offers will come in at the end of the month. We'll be evaluating them by the middle of the month. Our subcommittee, I believe, we're set to meet on the 13th, and you'll get a notice on that. And we are still on track to bring you a recommendation in December 3rd and then a potential action on the 17th. And it's our expectation that will be not just a recommendation of a partner, but a recommended approach that's compliant with House Bill 105 that allows the money to be spent.
Brett?
Mr. Chairman, I just have one more follow-up idea on the question regarding some pilot homes, and that is if we could pick the 10 closest homes with wood-burning heat, you could conceivably create some data on the health effects and the conversion. One of the hidden underlying drivers, it's not too hidden, but is the health consequences of Fairbanks. And people don't, that's not really real. I mean, it is real in an air quality context, but if you could produce data, visuals, specific progress, a way to fly the flag on that issue, it could be valuable.
Your suggestion made me immediately think of North Pole. There are challenges because there's no storage there, but there are challenges to everything we do. But
I know
but
there's no off the record here, but if you could do Tammy's house.
There is no easy button here, buddy. If there was a pilot project and it was in the area of worst air control, that would be what we would look for.
I would assume this would have to be done in the summer.
You're
talking next summer. You're not putting a line into someone's house, either yard in the middle of winter or throwing.
No.
So it would be next season. So there's a little bit of time to come up with a
creative solution, yes.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Yeah. So to follow up with Fred's idea, so could you just take like one of these blocks and just hook an LNG trailer and say it's going to sit there for 6 months and convert those houses and blah,
come and shoot.
Is that a realm of possibility?
It's a little more complicated than that.
Okay, that's enough for today.
And that trailer was the...
No, this is good.
And then the last two pages you've got are the build-out maps, and they're, for those of interest who've driven around North Pole or are familiar with town. And that concludes our report for this month.
Where's Badger Road?
A lot of work between now and the next meeting, and we'll be there.
So Bob, I've got a couple quick questions.
You bet.
One is how has been your community support, both with utilities, IGU, Golden Valley, Fairbanks Development, the government organizations? Can you give us a report on where you're at with all that?
I would say that, one, they're following it close, as you heard from the mayor, but
but to the visible progress and our willingness to hold meetings in Fairbanks and do things in Fairbanks has been well received. Utilities, all three came, and you know, when you have five finalists and you meet for 2.5 hours apiece, you committed a big block of time. And we had FNG, IGU, and Golden Valley at all five of those meetings, weighing in and participating. Cooperation between FNG and IGU has been good. Golden Valley has been struggling with opportunities for oil-based fuels compared to gas. And as you know, there's been uncertainty on their demand. As it came down to the issuing of the best and finals, we had a little discussion about you need to pick up the foot that's on the dock or the one that's on the boat, because we need to know. And they came to the conclusion that if gas came in a range of $10 to $12 wholesale to town, which is the target we have to be in to meet our goals, that they would look to be a summer customer. And for a plant that has a huge seasonal swing, someone who's a substantial summer customer has good economic benefits both for utilization of the plant and utilization of the trucks and tankers. It's probably not as good as being an anchor tenant, because then you also have 115,000 gallons a day in the summer you could divert that is part of your emergency plan. But it is a substantial benefit to the project, and I appreciate them being willing to step up in a period of uncertainty. And so the utilities, I would say things are going well and progressing along where they're feeling appropriately involved and informed and not left out behind while somebody else is deciding for them. I've met with the outgoing and incoming mayor along with FEDC to make sure that they're briefed before our best and finals went out, so they understood both what our changes were, what Golden Valley's role was, because that dropped their demand considerably over the June RFP, and they fully understand it, and they're looking forward to the town meeting that they're hosting. If you saw the announcement for the town meeting, it's got the borough, the city of Fairbanks, and the city of North Pole are co-sponsoring that discussion on the 4th of November. I haven't been back to any of the councils, but I've been in touch with both the North Pole and the city of Fairbanks mayor, keeping them updated as well as we're doing it. And so I would say they're feeling informed. They're a little concerned about the oil prices, just as are we, and so they're watching it, and their sense of urgency has not changed. As you heard from Mayor Hopkins, I would say I heard that from all three.
Further questions of Bob and Nick and Jerry?
So there's another big event that we could sell too, and that is the date. Maybe you could announce it on November 4th, the date that the rates are going to drop 13.5% or whatever it's going to be. That was just in the paper, it said, well, they're going to drop. It was just one sentence. Could we sell that a bit also?
Well, you'll play a role in that. It's our job, working effective. When Nick talked about the organizational meetings between ADA and FNG, the one of the top queued up is by the policy you passed, FNG and ADA management are to bring a recommended rate schedule to the ADA board. I would hope we're queued up to bring that to you by the 3rd of December. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, whether you make them effective immediately or January 1, you can expect in December to see work from collectively your ADA management, FNG, and the IEP team to help bring you those.
And so at the November 4th meeting, can you say something like that to the assembled people anticipating those dates?
By then, I should have a sense of confidence as to how far we've progressed to get to there. So that's highly probable.
Brett?
Mr. Chairman, in that vein, aren't we doing December 3rd in Fairbanks? We're doing it here. I just wondered about building some sort of photo up, a 13.5% price slash blue ribbon special. Or
I need to bring Carson up here.
Yeah, but anyway, somehow memorialize it or make an event out of it.
Yeah,
Yeah. The winter's a good time to lower heating fuel prices.
Blue light special. That's a blue light special.
Blue light special.
None of these dates you have are really etched in stone. The December 17th date can slide. There's no drop dead dates here on there.
That's correct. It's our job to bring you a completed project, not a meet a deadline.
Okay, thank you. It's your job to do both.
Well, I'm highly motivated to do both.
You know where the salt be living.
That's right. I know. You know where my cabin is.
We had a subcommittee on the telephone a couple of weeks ago, and the chairman chewed on Mr. Shevchuk pretty hard about it. So, what are you going to leave us when you leave?
A completed project.
Well, thank you, Bob and Nick. Appreciate the update and your hard work. Thank you.
Can I just respond to a couple of the questions on conversion?
Absolutely, Gene.
Just on the issue of is there something that we can do, and Bob touched on the fact that we're working with IGU and Alaska Housing Finance on the existing energy rebate program that they have. That program is currently funded in this current fiscal year. The utilization of that program has dropped off. It's targeted at energy efficiency for residences. And converting to natural gas qualifies as an energy efficiency measure because the appliances are so much more efficient than fuel oil. Although we don't have gas to deliver to the houses right now, because that program has funding, it does to the end of the fiscal year, which is next June 30th, we are going to be working with IGU to really encourage residents that have not already utilized that program to consider doing so. We want to time that. Although in the month of October is Energy Efficiency Month, we haven't really gone out, although they have started handing out some flyers.
I got a flyer in the mail yesterday.
But we're going to really hit it hard the next couple of months, because when you qualify for that program and you do an energy audit, you turn that into HFC. They actually put a little picket fence around $10,000 for your house, and they'll hold that money for 18 months. So although there's not gas in the pipes in front of my house right now, if I waited until January or February, and you can have an energy audit done in your house January or February, and I get $10,000 reserved for my house, I can do the conversion of my house either in calendar year 2016 or all the way into potentially the spring of the next year. So there is a possibility that I might change out my boiler at a time that would coincide with gas being in my house, or I might have to bridge the gap for a couple of months using propane. I mean, that's a possibility. Or you might be like myself, my existing hot water, well, my existing plants, as I told you before, is 30 years old, original boiler and domestic hot water. I had a problem with the hot water, so it was prompting me to do something sooner rather than later. So yesterday, the plumbers were in my garage cutting out my existing system, boiler and hot water, and replacing it with a new, much more efficient fuel oil fired system that will be easily converted to natural gas. I would have preferred to have waited to maybe have it coincide with the availability of gas, but because I had to do something with my hot water system, I chose just to make the jump right now. So have I converted to natural gas? No. However, I have taken a step in preparing to use natural gas. I've accessed $4,000 worth of grant money to underwrite that expense. And then when gas is available now, it'll be easy for me to convert to natural gas, much less expensive than the whole quote swap out at that time. And I'll sort of get myself out of what we hope is this mad rush for, you know, hundreds of people trying to convert at one time. I will have already actually done the conversion. Now I just need to change the burner unit and do some internal piping to get the gas actually to the burner. So we do hope to encourage people to access those grant dollars to help prepare themselves to use natural gas, get lower energy costs now while they're still using fuel oil, and get themselves out of that, you know, mad dash to convert when gas is available. So that, you know, I guess, again, it begs the question, have I started to convert? Well, I think I have. And we're going to really encourage as many people as possible to do the same thing. some other point I wanted to make. Then the other thing is access to sources of money that can be used by mechanisms that will help the consumer if they need to finance. We teed up the PACE legislation. I identified a potential source of federal funds that can be utilized. They may have to flow through an electric co-op. We have asked RUS whether AEA or ADA would qualify as the entity that could receive those federal funds and pass them off to the gas utility. We're waiting for a response on that. With regards to the health benefits, there's the potential of another funding source that comes with a very low interest rate that's tied to the issue of lowering emissions, especially PM2.5. And there's a term called atmospheric deposition. You put all that particulate in the air, it eventually falls to the ground and impacts the water system. So there's a potential link to an existing source of funds that are really targeted at water quality, but other states have figured out how to use those funds for energy efficiency, lowering emissions, lowering impacts to the water bodies. And so I'm working with DEC on potentially accessing that. The former head of the air programs for the state, Alice Edwards, has now moved up to a deputy commissioner position where she oversees the water programs and the air programs. And so I think she's strategically placed to help us figure out how we access that, that pot of money, again, to provide to the utilities or the local government to help our residences and businesses convert and be able to stretch the payments for the conversion over a period of time with low interest loans.
Thank you, Dean.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Just a small example of the reason we all have those kind words to say in the last meeting.
He's over on this side now.
Yeah. He's come to the light.
So before you leave, John, and maybe Mark would have, I've got a couple quick questions. So the Pentex has transaction has been completed.
Yeah.
Remind us again when their fiscal year starts.
Yeah, so their calendar year. Fiscal
okay.
Year.
All right. And so when will the board see a budget for 2016 for Pentex? I think that's going to play into the rate setting.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that we want that. I assume we will see quarterly budget review reports probably net 30 days after on each quarter. And I assume Michael's going to be in the middle of all this, right?
We conversations that were mentioned, so all that's underway, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So would we can we expect to see December a document, a budget for approval for 2016 for Pentex?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, so this is any other questions on the IEP project? I think, again, Gene and Nick and Bob Short-Timer, who's going to be at the back of the list now, he's a short-timer, for their help on this. Item C is executive session, and the chair will entertain a motion to go into it.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board enter into an executive session to discuss confidential financial information related to the Interior Energy Project, which ran the Petroleum Mustang Operations Center, Bluecrest Energy Drill Rig, Piscataway, or Terminal.
The list is getting longer.
Sorry.
All right, we're in executive session. What room are we in, Fran?
Aspen.
Which one?
The Aspen.
Okay, Aspen.